Welcome to Nancy's Bookshelf, a weekly program of conversations with writers in the studios of North State Public Radio. Now here's your host, Nancy Wiegman.
My guest today studied fine arts with a dance emphasis at the University of New Mexico, but she always wanted to know more about natural health, especially of animals. Kim Bloomer had an instinctive love of animals since she was a child. She worked in the pet store, a research facility, and various veterinary clinics when she was younger. She has now written a memoir dedicated to the animals that have been her teachers throughout her life. Animals Taught Me That is an illustrated account of the life lessons learned through animals she has known.
It was only later I learned that since he was in his final death throes, we actually didn't have to further stress him by loading him into our car, taking him to a vet, and euthanizing him, since he was only an hour or two from dying normally at home. I've learned much since then about hospice care for animals. Our sweet, loyal boy even wagged his tail at me when I walked into the room, tears in my eyes, knowing he was about to take his final car ride with me. Our neighbors were nearly as sad as we were, as was my friend. She was busy digging his grave in the hard, cold winter ground on her property in the mountains. I wanted to cradle him in my arms as I tried to be brave and tell the vet I would hold his vein off for the euthanasia drug, just as I had done for my cat, Misa. But I simply could not do it. Bridge died in the arms of strangers, with Donnie and me sitting next to him, sobbing our hearts out. As I write this story, I can feel the pain of that devastating loss all over again. We paid the bill, wrapped our sweet boy in the big comforter we brought him in with, and took him home. The house was so utterly empty without his bigger-than-life presence. I slowly gathered up all his toys, bones, dishes, leash, and collars, and stored them away. It was just too painful for us to look at them. Early the next morning, Donnie took Bridge up to the mountains he had loved and buried him there in the winter snow next to my special kitty, Mise. In the spring, big sunflowers graced his grave, reminding us of the circle of life. Live life to the fullest. Give all you have to give, and then give some more. Be happy. Never miss a moment to make someone smile. Have courage in the face of adversity. Wait patiently for others to catch up to where you are. And love others from the bottom of your heart. Golden Retrievers, by the names of Trumps and Fritch, taught me that.
This is my guest, Kim Bloomer. She's reading her from her book, Animals Taught Me That. And Kim, I appreciate your willingness to read that because I know how hard it is. But so many of us who have loved animals, we go through this. And I was wondering if you say he died in the arms of strangers. You weren't able to be there. And when I went through this with one of my dogs, a friend of mine wanted to be there because she said she wasn't able to be there when her own dog passed. And I wondered if you have any feelings now, would you have done that any differently?
Well, I was sitting right there. And what I mean by him dying in the arms of strangers, I felt like, because I'm a former vet tech, that I was the one who should have been holding him and participating actively in that euthanasia rather than somebody else doing that. That was just, I imagine, a form of guilt that I had in not being the one doing that. But I was there with him. Sadly, Nancy, in other cases, I had to leave the room. I could not bear to see them take their final breath. And so even though I have participated in euthanizing many pets in this situation as a former vet tech, it's so much different when it's your own. And I've since learned about hospice care, which is actually much more prevalent now for animals than it was at the time when I was, even when we had to euthanize Fridge. It's much different now than it was when I was working in veterinary medicine. There was no such thing. So I would encourage people, if they know that their pet is dying and that they are going through that process, similar to what you would see with a human loved one, I would hope that we would I think that we euthanize sometimes out of our not wanting to watch them suffer or the fear of what's going to happen. But if you know and you're being guided by somebody that can help you with that, whether it's a veterinarian or somebody in natural health or just a close friend that knows, then by all means, you may want to go that route and allow them to die in the peace and comfort of their home, because what Fridge had to go through should have been comfortable in his home instead of being lugged into a car because he could no longer walk, and then taken into a vet clinic where it's noisy, there's other animals, there's barking and animals crying, they're fearful because they're in a strange and noisy place. And we were not able to do that for him, and we could have had I known. So as Maya Angelou said, when you know better, you do better, right?
My guest is Kim Bloomer, and she's just been describing the death of one of her beloved pets, a dog. And I find it, I don't know, comforting, it might be the word, that there exists hospice for animals. And I think people will be glad, people who love their animals will be relieved to hear that, Kim, that there is such a thing as hospice for animals.
I know. I learned this, right after that time. We had another dog since then, and he's the reason I went into natural health, was my Neil Mastiff, who plays a role in this book, a pretty yes. big role, because he was a pretty big dog and pretty big in my heart. But he, from then, and from, I started a podcast back in 2005 and began to meet people in natural health, began to have guests that were teaching me. And one veterinarian in particular who lives out in California, and that is her main goal, is hospice for animals. So I began to learn about that from her. Her name is Dr. Ella Battelle, and she's originally from Germany. And she was a beautiful person that I fortunately got to meet in person, who came to New Mexico. And then I drove her up to meet another well-known person in our natural health world, Linda Tellington Jones, who does the T-Touch. And she had this presence about her, and my dog Shadrach was with me, and he kept trying to touch her while she sat in the seat. She kept reaching his paw out to touch her. So she has this gentleness, and she actually did that because of a dog of hers. She felt like they needed to be able to experience that kind of comfort and hospice. So now there are veterinary services who will come to your home to do the final euthanasia, so you don't have to go into a clinic. It does cost more, but in my opinion, it's worth it to not have to put them through that. And they will also guide you, to know what to look for, and so that you don't feel like you're floundering, not knowing, should I or shouldn't I? So yeah, I think it's really great.
I've done it both ways, taken it to the vet, and mm-hmm. she was had been the veterinarian for this dog, and also a vet who came to the house. And so my dog was there in her front yard at home. And by that time, because she couldn't see or hear, but I've done it both ways, and I prefer the having it done at home.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You grew up with a veterinarian for a father,
Actually, there were four veterinarians in my family.
Right,
I was kind of the exception, the fact that I didn't become a veterinarian. So I am very respectful of the profession, although there are times when you disagreed with a vet, and I have experienced that also. But for example, a couple of my dogs needed back surgery, and I was so grateful for the skill in surgery.
Absolutely.
I had to take them to nearby Sacramento, but I was so grateful there were people with those skills to take care of my animal who needed it.
I agree with you on that.
Another thing that was inspiring, maybe is the word, about your book, is that I have so many regrets that out of ignorance when I would first have a dog, and I just didn't know any better, and things I thought, gosh, I wish I hadn't done that way. And you're very honest in your book too. You say, boy, I this is what I did, and I shouldn't have done it that way. So it's kind of comforting to think, yeah, she's writing this story as it is with all her flaws.
Well, you know why I think I barely just told you this, but I had seen a situation on a video. Okay. And we know videos can often, sometimes they're designed to do that, to upset you. But I reached out to Dr. Basham because I know that he knew about these things. And it was a downed cow. Somebody had done an underground film of a downed cow in a feedlot. And I was so upset by the whole thing. And it was probably a series of events, accumulative sort of thing, that it just overwhelmed me and outpoured this three article series that I wrote on all of this. And I thought, yes, I'm going to write this article. I'm going to write a book about all of this kind of stuff. And God gently said, but what about you? And I was like, maybe I better take a hard look at my own participation in doing things wrong out of ignorance, out of selfishness, out of, I think mostly just, you know, what's convenient for me, what's easier, what's the path of least resistance in a lot of cases. And really just thinking that, you know, what was more important was me than the, even though I'm a professed, mind you, animal lover. And my mother recently, she told me recently, she said, I said, if you thought anything about me, Mom, if anybody said anything about me as a kid, what would you say? I'm an animal lover. She goes, that's about it. And I thought, but was I living up to that?
We're going to take a short break. Then I'll continue my conversation with author Kim Bloomer. You're listening to Nancy's Bookshelf on North State Public Radio. I'm Nancy Wigman. I'm Nancy Wigman, and you're listening to Nancy's Bookshelf on North State Public Radio. My guest is Kim Bloomer, and she has written the book Animals Taught Me That. It's an illustrated account of the life lessons learned through the animals that Kim Bloomer has known. And I mentioned that it is an illustrated book. Would you describe the cover, Kim, of your book for us?
Well, yeah, there's a beautiful horse, and one of my favorite colors of them. In fact, that's like my dream horse, and I have the actual original portrait of this horse on my wall is because the artist, Barbara Hilford, drew the cover. So she has a golden retriever, and then she has the horse. And she is a real good friend of mine. She's about 20 years my senior. And what an amazing, amazing artist. And she also did the horse on the back, the Palomino. And I asked her to illustrate the book for me, and she illustrated and edited it for me. So it was really a big thing.
Well, you know, I think her love for animals comes through in her illustrations. The horse and the dog on the cover, these brown gold tones, and the way the dog is looking at me. And so I really wanted to compliment your illustrator, Barbara Hilford, for her loving illustrations on the cover and throughout the book.
She actually does artworks for God. She's no longer, she used to do portraits of animals, you know, commissioned work. And now she just simply does it. At the time before 2020 came along, she was doing this in nursing homes and using her artwork to illustrate scripture with animals.
Well, I ask you to read that section of your book about the death of a pet, because so many of us that love our animals have to go through this, something similar at some time or other in our lives. But you had a chapter that we don't go through. We don't even know what takes place in these facilities. We do know that experiments are done on animals. We don't like that. We try to, most of us who love animals, try to avoid products that have used animals in experiments with animals. But you actually worked in a facility, this research facility, when you were young. And you tell us what goes on there. Would you tell us, well, first of all, how old were you when you went to this facility?
I was 18, and it was not my first job. I mean, I had been working since I was 13 because my grandmother had restaurants, so I always worked for her and then worked with animals prior to that. So I was used to working, but always wanted to work, you know, in something where there was kennels, where there was a lot of animals. I just wanted to work with dogs in particular, or horses, or both, or what, you know. And so my stepfather, who worked at the, he was a professor at the University of New Mexico, was able to finagle this job for me. And all I knew, Nancy, was all I heard him say was dogs and kennels. I didn't hear the rest of it, even though I knew where I was going. You know, when you're young, you sometimes just don't think past what your immediate wants are. And I didn't look at the big picture. I just looked myopically at, wow, I get to be with dogs all day, every day in kennels, until I worked there. And when I saw the amount of security and clearance and everything we had to go through to be there, and then I thought, you know, I really had a whole different viewpoint of probably a more, I don't know, very naive viewpoint of veterinary medicine, because there are veterinarians that are, some of them in this case were scientists. They weren't, I mean, a lot of them are, I mean, we're all interested in science that go into that field, but this is, their science was to see, I don't even know how to be able to describe it. It was, they seemed robotic to me, if that makes sense. So when I was working there, what they were doing was exposing these animals to different inhalation things, from the rats and mice, rabbits, to the dogs. And I was working in a kennel with what is called exposed dogs initially, meaning dogs that had been exposed to those things. And our job was to document, and back then there weren't computers and things that we were using. We just wrote down every day who looked okay and who didn't. And then the veterinarian would come in around in the afternoon and check what you wrote. I never, hardly ever saw that. They would walk through the kennel and probably go look at the dog, but they never examined them. If they examined them, we had to bring them to them. And then they would take them and do whatever they do to them and then send them back to the kennel. And so we had to watch them die. And no matter what I said, I mean, aren't you going to do anything? And I remember one just kind of smiling at me. It was more of a smirk. This is what we do. We wait to see how long that exposure took this animal to die. And then I had my eyes opened.
My guest is Kim Bloomer, and she's describing her experiences in a research facility when she was a teenager. She worked there, and you were saying that your job was keeping the kennels clean, feeding the dogs, but also making note of any changes. And as you were saying, the veterinarian wouldn't do the examining unless you took the initiative, apparently, and said, hey, Doc, would you take a look at this dog, for example?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And
that was part of their job. I mean, their job was to document how long it took and what were the changes in that animal. When we would come in and find one dead, then they would take the animal and do what is called a necropsy in animal health, an autopsy in human health, so they could see what the damage was. And I would just take the dog, or they would, you know, take the dog in, or would go get it to be brought back to the kennel. I fortunately was transferred to the puppy and breeding kennel. So yes, they had their own dogs to breed on site, as with all the rest of the animals. In other words, they weren't bringing, as you will hear stories of animals, people's pets being confiscated or going to shelters and getting animals out. No, these were bred there. So they were bred and raised and lived their entire lives there.
And the life was not a quality of life. I mean, they didn't have any toys. They didn't get bones.
Nope.
They didn't have any life outside that enclosure where they spent their whole short life.
Sadly, they were in individual enclosures, so they even didn't get to play together.
And you were saying that's what was a little different with the puppies.
The puppies got to. The puppies were all together in their, you know, with their mothers. And then later, after they were weaned, then they were put, all the whole litter would be put in another kennel together. And eventually then separated out into the what we call the exposed kennels, where they would be exposed. And then they started also exposing some of the younger puppies while from our puppy kennel. And I remember being pretty upset about that. And I was told in no uncertain terms that if I didn't like it, I could quit. So
because
there was
they were exposed to radiation. And
yes,
say in this chapter, one morning I came to work, discovered that poor animal dead, blood coming from his mouth.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And you say, I was extremely upset and went immediately to notify one of the vets. And you said something like, I kept telling you he was sick, but nobody did anything for him. And what did the vet reply? Do you remember? That's because that was part of the experiment.
Right. And it was, I think the worst for me was working with the, when I went in for a couple of days where I had to work with the primates. To me, that was the absolute worst, is what they put in their heads, electrodes to, I don't know what they were doing with them because I didn't work in there. I was like a substitute there for a few days. And sadly, some of the people that are supposed to be, what we were called, you know, caretakers, I weren't very caring. They would torment these animals because they were strapped into seats where they couldn't do anything. So they would tease them and stuff. And of course, I'm very outspoken. My mom recently told me that I've been outspoken and asked a ton of questions my whole life. So I said something to these men that were my fellow coworkers and got on their case, and they all were very chagrined, fortunately, after that, because I was sad for the monkey.
Well, those of us who don't know any better imagine that, well, in these laboratories, they do experiments on rats and mice, and we can we say, okay, they do that. But monkeys, particularly rhesus monkeys, they're so like humans that it pains us all the more to see these animals treated so disrespectfully.
Very much. And they're terrified, by the way. You could see, and I could see this monkey knew somehow, I don't know how, maybe in my mannerisms, how I was looking at him. And, you know, they read facial expressions so well, animals do, that I was like, I want to get you out of here so bad. I was so upset. I cried there. And they told me that I would never be able to work in that area because I'm too emotional. But
and you say all these years later, you still cry when you think of this poor monkey.
I can still see him in front of me. And all I know is he's running free in heaven now. So I'm glad about that. But I was very upset to see. He was looking at me like, please help me.
And you, again, you criticize yourself at this point. You say, I was a coward. I simply went home and on with my life while that poor little monkey had to live out his days in that awful place.
He did.
And you call yourself a coward, but that's a difficult situation you were in, Kim.
Yes, I was bound by, you know, they make you sign those documents that say you cannot, you know, in other words, there's nothing, I was literally hogtied in that situation. So when I've read things about people that go to the extreme to release these animals, and I don't agree with some of the extremes that they're going to, the points that they go to, because sometimes they're messing around with legit animal care, right? But other situation like this, at that point, I was able to see from a different perspective why they feel that way, you know, and knowing what I saw these animals endure. And yes, I've shared how my own pets in this book had to endure things from my own willful ignorance and selfishness. But in that case, there was nothing I could have done for any of them, but oh my goodness, did I want to. And I don't know if that counts for anything, but I sure did want to.
You conclude each chapter, because the title of your book is Animals Taught Me That, And at the end of each chapter, you describe what you learn, what the animals in that chapter, sometimes it's just a one animal, but what you learned. And this conclusion of your chapter on the research facility, you say that research facility animals taught you sacrifice, because that's what they do. Mm-hmm. They sacrifice their lives for us. And I think most of us are not going to storm a research facility to free the animals, but I think it would cause us to maybe read labels more carefully and choose products that are not tested on animals.
I agree with that 100%, and more so because I was young enough to work there. Here's the sad fact though, Nancy. I mean, through a big majority of my life, I did what most of us do. We go to the store and we just buy what's on the shelves. And I no longer do that. I haven't done that in 15 years, but I did it for a big part of my life. And it was just because it's easier and also less expensive. And I cannot judge people where they're at. The good news is there are things you can make yourself that are so inexpensive, and you know exactly what's going in there. And so I've learned that. I've learned how to make my own lotion. People don't think about lotion. Yes, makeup, perfume, deodorant. A lot of those things are tested. In fact, the majority of those things are tested on animals. If they don't say they're not tested on animals, you can pretty much bet that they are. All house cleaning items, any kind of things that you use in your home, like air fresheners and things like that, are tested on them. So to see how long it's going to take before that's going to affect a human. For me, it was my own dog that caused me to look deeper at that because of his challenges with his own skin. I started to look deeper into that, and that's how I ended up in natural health, to be quite frank. I was realizing that, hey, maybe this is why I'm having these issues in my own health, why I have allergies, why I have asthma, which, by the way, I no longer do. I mean, I get, you know, things here and there that you react to because my body is pretty clean, so I react to it. And that's a natural, normal reaction, but not an ongoing thing where I'm on multiple medications. And I was able to eliminate all that when I started to learn this. And in the process, I was able to also help not contribute to the harm of animals that way.
My guest is Kim Bloomer. Her book is Animals Taught Me That. And one thing you learned, a lot of times we see an ad on TV for a bug spray saying, oh, well, if I've got bugs, that's the answer. And people who read your book will stop and say, no, maybe not, that's not the answer. Maybe I can find another way of coping with this problem without resorting to harmful bug sprays. And then you thought about the pest control guy that sprays. So what do you do instead?
That's a good question, Nancy. Yes. And the thing that I try to teach people is that this is a lifestyle. I know a lot of people want to flip what they were doing to something natural. And that's a good way to start. We all start there. But when I started to embrace that this is a lifestyle, it became much easier in my mind to receive all of that. So I typically don't use anything in my yards for bug spray. I don't use pesticides, herbicides, or chemical fertilizers. And I've had people say to me that live in this area, "You come on, you've got to have fleas. You've got to have, pests and things." And I say, "I don't have fleas because my dogs don't attract them because they're healthy. Their blood is healthy." And there's an old saying by a farmer where's a little girl standing next to a farmer, and she goes, "How come that dog over there has ticks and that one doesn't?" And he said, "Bad blood." So it's the blood, and the blood's going to be bad if we do enough wrong, meaning if we're not caring for the animal according to their species needs. And that starts with nutrition. And that's a whole other topic and a pretty deep one too. But so I told this guy, no, I don't. I do sometimes use, and we have to pretty much use jurisprudence with this because we don't want to, I mean, food grade diatomaceous earth is something that I do use even on ourselves internally in our smoothies, but it's to keep maybe the ants from not coming into my house, keep them off my patio, that kind of thing. Ants are really good at keeping aphids under control. So they will eat the aphids, which are larvae, so they eat those. And so I keep a balance in my yard, and I have to be cognizant also of my dogs because I don't want them being stung, which they have gotten at times. So we keep this natural ecosystem going, and you do that by supporting the plants in your yard, your whatever you're growing there. You use non-chemical organic fertilizers, which makes the plant healthy, and then it will be part of that whole process. So I have a natural eco balance just by doing that, believe it or not, Nancy, without all the other stuff. So people are kind of shocked at that because all my neighbors use that kind of stuff, but I don't.
Yeah. In fact, there's one point in your book where you say, I was learning not to simply accept the status quo because mm-hmm. someone told me to.
Right.
And that's what I think a lot of people do. They just don't stop and think, maybe there's a different way to do that. And if a problem comes up, I'll just take my symptoms, my dog to the vet and say, well, doc, here's what's happening. Instead of looking, well, what am I doing? What is the root cause of these symptoms? Instead of, well, this, I think, is kind of a no-brainer that we want to treat the root cause and not just treat the symptoms.
So exactly.
How do you go about that, though?
How do you get to the root cause? That's a good question. I can say to my friends, for example, that maybe have gone a conventional route. And so I'll say, okay, so what did the doctor or the veterinarian, did they determine what the root cause was of that particular ailment? And usually I get the answer I get is, well, no, they just gave me medication for the symptom. And so I will say, okay, so they didn't get to the root cause. So if you can figure that out. So how do you figure that? I always start with nutrition. With the animals, I'm always going to look at, let me see what you're feeding them. And I could pretty much probably tell you what to eliminate and what to do differently. And from there, then we can help that animal to be well without, and that's my goal always, not to get well, but to be well so they can live well. And we start there, and then we look at all the other contributing factors, like what I just mentioned in the way of personal care and home care. Because you think about it, your pets are laying on the floor. And if you're using conventional cleaning products, that's going to be more readily going into their body. They're barefoot all the time. So that's going to go into their, even though their paw pads are naturally protective and repellent, they're still going to absorb. They have detoxification pathways in their feet. So that's all going to go into their bodies. And then from there, you start to see symptoms arise in your pet and you don't know why. You go to the vet and you get a medication, and then you get another medication. And then before you know it, you're having a surgery. And then before you know it, you're being told, we're sorry, there's nothing more we can do. And really, so we have to get proactive. So what I tell people I do, in the difference from a veterinarian, and I'm fortunate to have good veterinarian friends such as Dr. Basham who get this. And so they will say, they diagnose, prescribe, and treat disease. I promote and build health. Yeah. So I'm teaching you how to be proactive. So it's a lifestyle.
After a break, I'll be back with Kim Bloomer, author of Animals Taught Me That. You're listening to Nancy's Bookshelf on North State Public Radio. I'm Nancy Wigman. I'm Nancy Wigman, and you're listening to Nancy's Bookshelf on North State Public Radio. Author Kim Bloomer has written a memoir, Animals Taught Me That, an illustrated account of the life lessons learned through animals she has known. As For example, yoga has gained popularity here in the United States. We hear a yoga teacher might tell you, listen to your body. And you have a place in your book where you say, and you're talking about your dog, I wasn't listening to what his body was telling me. Mm-hmm. So you encourage us to really pay attention to our animal because there's information there that we could be overlooking. And so you, again, you're, again, self-criticism perhaps. I wasn't listening to what his body was telling me. So if we're really observant, what can we learn from our, say, our dog's body?
The first thing to understand is the difference between something being common and normal. A lot of the things that we think are normal are really just common, meaning our animals are obese. The population is obese. I've learned that a good probably 60% of the American populace is obese. And so we're creating a lifestyle for ourselves that is unhealthy. I would then probably translate to the pets in our home are going to have the same thing. We think if we give them more treats, things like that. There's a certain way an animal should look. And a lot of times I've been told with a couple of my dogs, yours were too thin. I said, no, yours are too fat.
Oh, you said that?
I did.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah, this is before I learned a little diplomacy. I told you I've always been outspoken. And I've since learned to say, well, no, I would have said that differently now. But in the beginning, you know, you get defensive, I think, when people don't understand. So I've since had to learn that after running a school, you have to learn a little diplomacy. Anyway, yes, I did say that. And
well, you know, there was a time when I spoke up and I didn't mean disrespect, because I say I respect the veterinary profession hugely, but I took my little dog in. She had diarrhea. And so I took her in and I said, she has diarrhea. And the person taking this, vomiting and diarrhea. I said, no, she's not vomiting, just diarrhea. A couple of seconds later, vomiting and diarrhea. So that should have been kind of a signal right there that they were not listening to what even I was saying.
They were hearing you, but not listening.
Yes. And they kept the poor little dog there all day long. The end of the day, when I went back to pick her up, they said, well, you can leave her here overnight. We'll do some more tests tomorrow. Because they tested the poor dog all day long. And they said, so one, you can leave her here overnight, or you can take her to Sacramento to a specialist. And I said, no, there's a third option. I'm taking her home.
Amen.
I took her home and she was exhausted from being there all day long. But the next morning she felt fine and there was no harm. And so I think sometimes you have to speak up.
You do have to.
Because you're saying just because something is commonplace doesn't mean it's normal.
The only way people can speak up, though, Nancy, is if they learn some things, if they get invested in the health of their animals. So if they will do that, then they will be able to advocate for them and know what questions to ask. I know what questions to ask. I've taken mine in for diagnoses, and 99% of the time I say, no, thank you for that. That's all I needed to know, and go home and do what I was going to do. But then, you know, I have a little bit of advantage there. But I invested in learning for the sake of my animals and because it's always been my passion. Because when I worked in vet medicine, I didn't see them well. I saw them get sicker and sicker over time. And I wondered, why? If we're doing all of this, why are they not well? So,
well, I actually do that with my human physician. I choose a physician that will honor
your questions.
questions, but also if I decline a treatment that is considered normal, mm-hmm. Well, if you have this, therefore the treatment is this. And my doctor knows that if there's a natural remedy, that's what I'll go for. Mm-hmm. Something that I feel like, no, I don't think so. He honors my choice to decline.
That's wonderful. That's a good doctor.
Yeah. And I'm very appreciative of that fact. And so I think when people read your book, they'll realize, yeah, I need to do a little homework myself. So when I do take my, say, dog or cat into the vet, I'll understand that maybe what is being presented is not the only option.
Exactly. And that's the thing, is there is more than one option. They're trained a certain way, your veterinarian or your doctor, so they're going to tell you what they know. But if you learn another way, then you can ask them about those things. A lot of times they won't know. And I had that experience with a dog many years ago who was, we were using a certain protocol on her, was using essential oils and good ones, by the way, not just the store-bought stuff. I have to qualify that. And because the dog had been diagnosed with myelopathy, which is, it's, you know, corgis have long backs. So just like a dachshund.
And do dachshunds, so, yeah, which I had, yes.
Yeah, so they can end up with that kind of a problem or, you know, some kind of a herniated disc, something. So this dog was paralyzed and had been for a while. And I had learned that before I was doing the work I'm doing now. So we experimented and this dog started to improve. And her veterinarian was so awesome. He just said, look, she's getting nerve regeneration. She can feel her hind feet and things. He goes, I don't know what you're doing. I don't know about it, but keep doing it. That's all he said to her. So yes. It was really great. And so that was a good veterinarian.
Yes. And we've been talking mainly about dogs or a cat, but you have a lot of animals that you mention in your book and what you can learn from them. You mentioned that on your cover is this beautiful illustration of a horse. And what did you learn from horses?
Oh, my goodness, horses. You know, they're the strongest character in, as far as animals go in the Bible. And so horses were my first love. I remember as a child, Nancy saying, I think I said horse before I said mom or dad. My first horse was Big Red, and he was on, my father and my mother were living on a farm. He was a ranch hand, and so my dad had to use, Big Red was the horse he used, and he used to get me on him. I think that was my first time I fell in love, and I learned that power, that meekness is power under control from horses. And meekness is a good thing. We're missing that in our society today. And people don't understand that meekness is like this. It's a true form of humility. It's an action that we take where we decide we have the power, but we don't have to authorize. We don't have to, you know, push that on everybody, whatever it might be, whatever the situation or case might be. We don't always have to put our opinion on everything. We don't always have to be the one who's right. I'm actually at a point in my life where I say I'm willing to be, I'm fine with being wrong if it will help me grow.
Well, do you know, speaking of horses, not too long ago at the dinner table, you know, sometimes you get the question, if you could be an animal, what animal would you be?
A horse.
It went around the... That's what I said. There are others, some women, a tiger, I forgot what some of the others were, but that's what I said too. I would be a horse. If I were an animal, that's what I would be.
I was as a child, Nancy, you know. I pretended I was anyway. I used to think I was sometimes, so.
Well, your book, as I mentioned, has a variety of animals, lots of cats, lots of dogs. Mm-hmm. And I mentioned when you, I asked you to read when you lost a dog named Fridge, who, mm-hmm. by the way, people think, what is she saying? The name is Fridge?
Like refrigerator, yes.
Like refrigerator.
Well, it was from the Chicago Bears refrigerator, Perry, who was a lineman, and the breeder named him that. And she gave this dog to me. I met her through the vet clinic I was working at, and they gifted this puppy to me. And he was the largest puppy in the litter, so they named him Fridge. So I was excited to have this guy because I loved golden retrievers, still do. Great Danes, though, kind of, they're like the epitome for me.
And you had a Great Dane, as a matter of fact.
I
also
did. Not a good owner to him. I was not. So.
Well, you were young and you had a lot to learn. And
oh, man. Yes, I did.
Give yourself some slack there. Now, you did mention a dog that... you had, I'll put it in the past now, that you usually end a chapter with maybe a short sentence or two about what you learned from that particular animal or animals. But there's, toward the end of your book, you have a long paragraph about what a neo-mastiff named Shadrach taught you. And it's rather lengthy because, and I've heard this from other dog owners, you start by saying, he made sure that we go for our daily walks, which helps me stay healthy. And I know a lady who, when her dog died, she felt like she wasn't as healthy because she'd go out and take walks because of her dog. Mm. And at this time, he was still alive. So you said, he has made us aware of how important it is to eat food that is specific to our species. He has shown us that when we honor the laws of nature, we can be healthy and defy genetics. We know that this dog was sent into our lives not because he needed saving, but because we truly do. And then you say that it was no accident that we were in need of a dog at the same time he was in need of a home. And the road with him has never been easy, but he's been the best thing to happen to us. I feel that he has shown me the path to redemption for all my mistakes. I'm a better person because of this needy little puppy came to a married couple, you and your husband, Donnie, in great need of life lessons that are often best learned through the love of an animal. And I see that just in my very own neighborhood, there are two neighbors that live alone except with their dog. So they're not really alone. And these dogs are so, one of them is a little young, and but this older dog is so attentive. He understands not some English words like dinner, but he is so attentive, and he reads his owner, and I hesitate to say owner. I think you would object to that.
I don't know that I would. I don't, be, okay. For legal reasons. For legal reasons, I say owner just because I don't want the government having more rights over my animal than me. But yeah. Otherwise, yeah, I say I'm his human.
Yes, yes. Well, I often, having dogs, knew that it was a canine-centric world. I mean, everything happens because of, from their viewpoint. Everything happens because of them. And there was a lesson that I just tried to briefly learn, that one of my little dogs was on a pill regimen, and my husband and I were going out of town. And so on a Sunday afternoon, the friend who was going to take care of our two dogs came over, and I had this long detailed explanation, what pills, how much, when. And so I thought we were going to sit down with this friend and go, and I was going to go over this list. And my husband just kind of out of the blue said, let's take him to the park. I thought, oh, no, I need to. So he took the dogs to the park, and Millie's last day on earth, we didn't know that. She died suddenly the next day. She was dead by the time my husband could get her to the vet. He went straight there. And I thought, my goodness, is that ever a lesson? That all this stuff that I think is important, that should be done, and my husband made sure that her last day on this planet was a happy one. He took her to the park. Wow. And so I thought, my goodness, is that ever a lesson? And you have some conclusions in your book, Kim, your very last chapter. And you said, we've come to the end of my journey together. My hope is you've learned something from my past mistakes. But more importantly, that you've learned how much animals can and do teach us. What else do you say in your conclusion, Kim?
Well, I think mostly, rather than going through the reading then, is that it's just that for me, because I've had this instinctive love of animals all my life, even though I've messed up, and I hope that your listeners will understand that we all do, that doesn't mean that you aren't somebody that's an animal lover anymore. So I feel that they've taught me, that they were in my life to teach me these things. And instead of me learning, I've learned so much about them and their nature. I've learned how to be a little bit dog and a little bit cat and a little bit horse. I've learned that while I have so much idealism when I was younger, that it's just really better to respect them and honor their nature as what they are. And I think that was a primary thing I've taught over the years, is learning about their nature made me realize that I have to be a true animal lover, I need to honor that. And
for example, when I go for a walk with a friend with a dog, and if this friend gets impatient because the dog wants to sniff everything, right. And so I just say, there he is being a dog.
That, you know what they are, because for a dog, the walk is not about exercise. The walk is about reading the newspaper. So I think that Henry Beston may have said it best in The Outermost House. He has this beautiful quote, and I've shared it so many times. I know it's not in my book, but if I paraphrase it, he's talking about them being, you know, more, they are our brethren, is the way he puts it, that they are separate they're not like us. They're their own. They've learned to adapt to our lifestyle far more than we've reached out to adapt to them. So let me give you guys an example. And you might think, okay, she's lost it, but that's okay. I'm fine with that. I play with my dogs like they want to play. When they put their behinds up in the air, that's a play thing. And so sometimes I'll do it and I mimic their body language. We do all kinds of things, but we howl together. And I found out that other dog people like me do the same thing. And I know cat people who do things that cats just do with their cats. So they're learning that you're communicating to them in their language because they've learned so much about how to communicate our way. I have a dog now, one of my dogs, who even sounds like he's saying to my husband when he comes home, because he's really my husband's dog, and he will bark or howl, "Where were you? Where were you?" And it sounds just like that. And we really feel like he's trying to articulate it, and it's precious.
Well, one lesson that you mentioned, that you said, it amazes me, and perhaps always will, the degree to which animals will always forgive us no matter what they have experienced at our hands and still want to be our friends. In fact, they seek us out. And I've seen instances of that too, where they're so forgiving. Although I have to admit that one time when we were gone, we left our two little dogs with friends, and one was happy to see us and greeted us, and the other pouted for a while, like, "Well, where were you? And you left us here, and we didn't get to chase squirrels like we wanted to." And he eventually did forgive us, but not right at first.
I had a female dog that was like that we lost in January 2019. She came to us when she was older and lived out her years with us, and she was absolutely amazing. But I'd gone on a week-long trip, and when I came back, she ignored me. She was going to pretend she wasn't happy to see me, but then she let go. The one, I have a male puppy now. Well, I call him a puppy because he still acts like one. He's 14 months old, and he's been probably the single most difficult dog I've ever had in my life. And his breed is more feral, meaning that they're less domesticated than others. And so it's been extremely challenging. But going back to what you said about the forgiveness, he doesn't care how frustrated I get with him. And just, if I want to pull my hair out sometimes, he will come and lay right next to me. He's totally 100% my dog, the way the other one is like my husband's. And it blows my mind. I ask him sometimes, "Why do you like me so much?"
Well, I think people will like your book, Kim.
Thank you.
The book is Animals Taught Me That. The author is Kim Bloomer. Thank you so much, Kim.
Thank you for having me on, Nancy. I'm so grateful.
You've been listening to Nancy's Bookshelf, a production of North State Public Radio. You can find this and other episodes of Nancy's Bookshelf on our website, mynspr.org.